The following program was pre-recorded. On WFAN, it's time for Hello, My Name is Craig, our weekly candid conversation about gambling addiction. It's supported by the Council on Compulsive Gambling of New Jersey, 800-GAMBLER. Now, here's Craig Carton.
Good morning and welcome to another edition of Hello, My Name is Craig. Craig Carton with you for the next 30 minutes of frank, open, honest conversation about gambling addicts. As always, joining me is Dan Trillaro. Danny, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well, Craig. I'm doing well. It's hopefully going to have a nice weekend, Mother's Day weekend. So
Mother's Day.
To your
right.
Wife.
Yes,
that's
thank
right.
you very much. She's not my mom, but I appreciate it regardless. All good. And joining us today is Scott. Scott is a gambler in recovery as well. Scott, appreciate you coming by and sharing your story. How are you doing today?
Oh, fantastic. The weather helps improve my mood. And likewise, happy Mother's Day upcoming. But just have a great day today. Doing
so
great.
So when was the date of your last wager?
My last wager was July 16th of last year.
Okay. And let's get into a little bit. Let's go back in time. We'll work our way back towards what happened a year ago. When did you first get exposed to any type of gambling?
Well, I've done a lot of work on thinking about that. I grew up, I was a day trader for a while. Never played any video games. Wasn't too competitive with the wagering, on the golf course, so on and so forth. But the advent of online gaming on my phone, become illegal in New Jersey, sober at the time, still sober, so that's good. It was always a vice to me, and I picked up gambling. That became a very big problem about 4.5 years ago.
Do you not view the day trading as a form of gambling?
I have to do look into my behaviors, and it's not so much the classic wagering that that was going on. Because once I stopped that, I had to look at myself. But I look back. I played Scrabble competitively with my mother, a penny a point kind of thing. So, I could look back at that. It's a wager is a wager is a wager. And so,
right.
It became a problem for me, like you said, when I had no control over it.
Dan, let me bring you in because, you were in the financial sector as well before you fell prey to gambling addiction. Looking back on your life, did you view making trades and investments as gambling now that you look back on it or no?
Yeah, looking backwards now, I can totally see it because it brings about those same feelings. When I'm speaking around the country, people get caught up in what's technically the legal definition of gambling. That's why, I play fantasy sports. I don't gamble. But, you start looking at these things where you're risking something of value in hopes of it gaining value. And there's this element of uncertainty or risk. And that just are the three elements that constitute gambling. So, day trading, cryptocurrency, options trading, it can all lead to the behaviors that start to, lead to someone's demise and starts to create problems in their life. Absolutely.
Yep. Now, Scott and I have spoken before. So for those people that have never heard, our back and forth, I want to tell people the story for the first time. Scott, when you first started gambling, using your phone to do it, were you playing casino games? Were you sports gambling? What was your appetite?
I was table games, primarily blackjack. And then after a terrible night, I put a monster wager on one spin of the roulette wheel, insane behavior kind of thing.
The reason I ask that, I'm always fascinated by guys like yourself that will use the phone for what, for years and years was solely brick and mortar casinos, walking into a building and betting on blackjack or craps or roulette. And the reason I'm fascinated by it is a lot of the guys I know that did it have mathematical brains or were in finance or, stock trading and day trading. And it would seem to me that you would not want to do it on your phone because you would play out probabilities and math. And betting casino games on your phone defies math. The way math is a big part of blackjack when you walk into a casino.
I'm not drawn to casinos. I don't want to the men's people that love casinos, yeah. But you know, it was a vice, it was a place of ill repute kind of thing growing up and stuff. So, you know, when I had access to, you know, bells and whistles, you know, my body actually kind of took over. I would lose track of time and, you know, I knew the odds and stuff, but I made a ton of money when I probably shouldn't have been making a ton of money. And money didn't really have a big impact on my gambling, I have to share with you. But it got me out of a discontented state. You know, I mean, I like the action, and time flew by.
So it made you feel better about whatever, you know, life's problems were throwing your way. Gambling was an escape.
Yep.
Yeah.
Let me just add something here too, because when we talk about Craig, you're right. Like the reward system in the brain, that's through the emotional side of the brain. So we're an active addiction. You know, we're really struggling with that emotional side, the reward system, and that silences the logical side, the reason side of the brain, the rational side that says, I should know better. This probability, this makes no sense. So it's almost like you have the emotional side trying to talk to the logical, reasonable side, and there's a disconnect. And then all of a sudden our body starts to take over. And that's where we start. They almost say the brain almost gets hijacked in a way by that reward system and that feeling. And all of a sudden, all the behaviors start to flow through the emotional side instead of the logical reasoning side.
Scott, give people an idea of when you were at the height of your gambling addiction. Give us a story or an idea of how that manifests itself, you know, from a standpoint of either time commitment or bad decisions or some of the gambling stories that you might have when you look back on it. It was really stereotypical for a gambling addict.
Here's an example. So when COVID came around, I became a professional golf caddy. I use the word professional because it was my profession. And so, you know, I'd work out outdoors, beautiful day, high quality people, lovely landscape, expecting 120 a bag, something like that. And I only got paid 210 total. And I'm at the clubhouse and I'm thinking, why am I not grateful that I just made $210 and beautiful day and so on and so forth? And I'll put a $30 wager on as I start walking back the length of two par fours to the parking lot. And I'll miss my $30 wager thinking I need to be made whole. This is what occurred. You know, it doesn't sound like sane thinking right now. And I miss and double that 60, double that 120, double that 240. Double that fourth time. I have four misses. I'm betting 480. I'm down now $1,030. You know, maybe there was a bad double in there and I was a bad beat, you know, a split or something like that. And literally, you know, I'm putting a $960 bet just walking back to my car. And, again, that's an example of, I lose $2,000 in 3 minutes. And I don't always like to talk about the exact dollars and cents is sure. the activity. You know, I've been at a red light and I lose a month's wages. And I'm like, just because I'm impatient or something ridiculous.
So this is where the phone comes into play. So I want people to understand that. You would carry a 70-pound bag for 4.5 hours, couple bags, make 210, mm-hmm. 220 bucks. And then in what was probably a 5-minute walk to your car, you lost that four times over.
Yeah. No, I mean, I'd open the car door, take my shoes off and be like, I can't, you know, I'd say, shucks, you know, I got to do this 6 more times to make up what I just lost in a 5-minute walk, you know.
Got it. How long were you like knee deep in it at that level?
So Craig, a quick background, you know, I have the blessing that I've been exposed to 12-step programming, and I also suffer from alcoholism. So I understand there's help for this kind of behavior and addiction and things like that. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, today I'm able to live in the solution, you know, instead of stuck in the problem. That being said, you know, I did achieve about 16 months. I had 16 months of abstinence from gambling, and then I stopped doing what I was supposed to be doing. And I was pretty sick, you know, so I have to do what I'm supposed to do and then even do a little more. But I know there's a solution, you know, and,
well, let me stop you there for a second. Cause I think it's important because, you know, we talk a lot about mm-hmm. recovery on the show, and Dan and I frequently mention that for the majority of people, not everybody, when you start recovery, there's usually a mistake made. You know, you gamble one more time, whether it's ego or, you know, you found yourself in a bad spot or your old tendencies. Not everybody starts recovery and stays in it 100% and has a success story. So you went almost a year and a half without gambling at all?
Correct.
And then what was the impetus that led you to gamble for the first time in a year and a half, knowing that you can't gamble responsibly?
It's just a cunning, baffling, powerful thing. It's like picking up a drink when I know I can't drink. It was, something was, I was restless. I was irritable. I was discontent. These are things that are hard to identify. I was actually living in a structured living environment, you know, getting my life straightened out and, middle of the night waiting for something to change. And, I certainly need to lean into God and I need to do some work to change. But, it happened real fast, real quick. And, I lost probably what would be 3 years worth of earnings in a 4 month period. And that's when I ran out of money. I just ran out of money and said, this is ridiculous. And,
you went on a legitimate bender.
Yeah. A binge bender, I was pretty good at manipulating, a lot of big creditors and I call it, uncollateralized revolving, debt, credit cards that are backed by nothing. And, I don't want to give people ideas, but, thank God, the other thing though, Craig, is, this time, I didn't lead, it led to a lot of pain to other people, but I basically ran out of money and I wasn't willing to jump into the criminal element to support my habit.
Let me stop you right there. We'll take a quick break. This is Hello, My Name is Craig.
Back to more of Hello, My Name is Craig on The Fan with your host, Craig Carton, and supported by the Council on Compulsive Gambling of New Jersey, 800-GAMBLER.
Welcome back to Hello, My Name is Craig. Dan Schlauer, of course, with us, and Scott with us as well, sharing his story as a fellow compulsive gambler. Dan, let me bring you in. When we left off going into the break there, he admitted that he had gone 16 months without gambling and then found himself on a four-month bender gambling until he had no money to gamble with. Yeah. Walk me through what therapists and people that are in gambling recovery would say about that type of experience.
Yeah, I mean, it's common, right? Like return to use in any addiction is something that we always have to be ready for. And oftentimes the common thinking is that the return to the gambling or to the drinking started way before the actual bet was placed. So you could go 16 months and then one night, in a weak state, you make some bets, but it probably started to get its claws some number of weeks or months earlier. And that could be not, taking the medicine, so to speak, on a daily basis, not attending meetings, not reading, not doing the things that have really been leading to some healthy decision-making. We start to take them for granted, and Craig, you even experienced that. I know you share a lot of times where you met a guy early on in your recovery who had been going, 30 years of GA? And you're like, aren't you done? And he goes, this is what keeps me 30 years in recovery.
Yeah.
So it's those little things we have to do on a daily basis, because if we stop taking our vitamins and our medicine, well, then we can start to fall ill again.
Scott, let me ask you this. Outside of just running out of money, and I don't want to oversimplify your story for you, was that really the reason you stopped again about a year ago?
Well, see, I have a toolbox of knowledge, but the knowledge isn't going to keep me away from the bet. So, I do attend a lot of meetings. The one ingredient, that I think that is different for me this time is I'm really helping others. And it's, a game changer because my sponsor, it points out that, all my problems are rooted in selfishness and the self-centeredness. I had a lot of self-sabotage going on. And I work hard on those things. But then, when it's not about you know, Scott, I get out of myself by helping others. And so it's amazing. It's I truly see it as an epidemic. My 15-year-old nephew, you know, gambles in his high school, right, you know, in with their lunch money, and their you know, I'll be watching I don't know. You just you because my eyes and ears are open to it right now.
Sure.
You see it everywhere. You just see it everywhere. And you know, I'm no different than I pulling up to a Wawa or a Quick Check at 6 a.m, seeing the guy buy a cup of coffee and $650 worth of scratch off tickets, and you know that's his paycheck that he just got, and then who knows if he's gonna go to work that day, you know. So it's really by the grace of God and a lot of a hard work and love and support of others that I'm making a difference today. That's the difference.
How confident are you that you've kind of got it figured out and beat gambling specifically? Or is there any part of your brain that worries about waking up one day like you did, you know, a year ago, a year and a half ago, and make another bad decision?
I'll answer it this way. It's not a fight where I'm going to win or lose. It's surrendering, I guess. It's an interesting concept, but like I just stop fighting. And you know, I have support. You know, thank God I still have the skills. My delusional thinking and my loss and lack of perspective changes with keep doing the right thing. And it's not always easy, that's for sure. But I don't believe that I've got it figured out for sure. I have enough respect and fear behind me to motivate me to help others and get better and help myself.
Final question for you, and then Dan and I'll wrap it up after that. Is there any part of you that misses gambling?
Yeah, here's an answer to that, and I'll try and be brief. You know, my mother and I would have dinner together, and we'd watch Wheel of Fortune and see if we can get the last clue to see who does the dishes. And I struggled for a long time equating, like, is that a wager or not, so on and so forth. And I don't even have to answer that. But what gambling did was, you know, it just destroyed relationships in my life, and so on and so forth. And by the grace, you know, the grace of God, and I could watch Wheel of Fortune again with Mother, and we both do the dishes. And, you know, it's a strange thing. My life is very full today, and I think Dan pointed it out. It's first acceptance and gratitude, both antidotes for what I suffer from. I'm working on my courage and my patience right now. The patience was a big one too. That's a, you know, because it's impulse stuff. It's impulse stuff for sure.
Well, it seems like you're back on a good path. So congrats on that. Proud of you for being willing to share the story. Thankful that you share your story so publicly. And, you know, we're thinking of you and hoping that you stay on the right course, and very much appreciate you sharing your story. So thank you very much, and enjoy the weekend. And thanks for coming on again. Appreciate it.
Both of you guys, thanks a lot.
Thanks, Scott.
Dan, before we get out of here, I want to ask a question about relapse with you. Because I know that a lot of people do. I've told my story many times. I came back from rehab admitting I had a problem, and the first thing I did was go to a casino. And that was my ego driving, because I wanted to prove to myself that I could gamble and stop when I wanted to stop. And I failed that test miserably. And that's the last time I've ever wagered, which is coming up amazingly on 7 years now since I made my last wager. But I'm wondering, what do the studies show? Is it that even though you have entered recovery, the chemical imbalance in your brain is still there, or the desire never goes away? What do the doctors and researchers say about why someone like Scott, after being in recovery for 4.5 years, suddenly decides today, all right, I'm going down that bad path again?
Yeah, you know, that's one of the mysteries of addiction, and that's why we often say it's biopsychosocial. You know, it's biology, it's psychology, it's your social sphere, it's genetic component. It's unique and different for each person. But I don't want to just leave it there, right? You know, we have times where, you know, Scott said something like he's got a toolbox, right? But just having a toolbox doesn't mean that he's going to stay clean and clear. You know, you have to know how to use the tools. You have to use the appropriate tool for the right job. And so, you know, oftentimes we equip ourselves with these tools, but then we just leave them off to the side. We don't use them. And it's, what we start to see is that when life throws curveballs, because life is hard, we know life is hard, and it hits people in different times and different ways. And going back to this thing that you've done that's been ingrained in your body, that your brain has told you every so often you're going to win. You know, that's the hard part, intermittent reward. Like, just do it one more time. And sometimes we try to take back our own will, Craig, and that's what you just described is, I don't want to surrender yet. I want to go out on the terms that I dictate, but it doesn't work that way. And it's when we can fully surrender to the process, to the program, whatever it is, to a higher power of your understanding, that's when we start to find the peace. But it's a daily struggle. We never have the thing beat. It's one day at a time for the rest of our life. And if we don't keep our eye on that, then all of a sudden we can start seeing some cracks in the foundation.
Yeah, look, I'm sure there are some people that at some point say, I know I've got a beat, and they're good and they do have a beat. But it seems like the majority of people, while they may not fight it every day, you know, the mantra of one day at a time just works better for them because it makes it easier to manage your own behavior, right? Like if I say to myself, all I got to do is not gamble today, well, that's a lot easier than me saying, I can never gamble again for the rest of my life.
It's too much to think about, Craig. You just hit it on the head. I remember before I was sentenced to prison that night before, thinking in my head, even leading up to sentencing, I can't believe I'll never be able to do this for the rest of my life. I mean, just listen to how big, how much time that covers, the finality of it all.
Yeah.
But if I just say, you know what, for the next 10 minutes, for the next hour, for today, I'm not going to do it. It's a bite-sized piece. When you eat dinner, you don't put the whole steak in your mouth. I mean, maybe you do. I'm not sure. But you cut it up into manageable chunks. That's how we have to approach life, manageable chunks.
Yeah. Well, keep doing the work you're doing. For those of you out there who are moms, of course, happy Mother's Day. Appreciate you letting us do this show every single week here on WFN. Appreciate you, Dan. Thanks so much, buddy.
Thanks, brother.
Coming up next, Joe Beningo. Enjoy the rest of your weekend right here on WFAN. Thank you for listening to Hello, My Name is Craig.